presence, and where God is present, he brings to us his peace. Well, we're in the midst of a series, Testing Times, thinking of Jesus in the period between Palm Sunday and Good Friday, when he's in the temple and he's meeting with people and teaching them. And so today's theme we're thinking of is answering wisely. Answering wisely. You may have read recently of the police in Whangarei, the Whangarei District Council. They decided to move on a street preacher who was in the city shopping centre, and they said that, well, the paper described him as a hellfire and brimstone preacher, and they felt he was disturbing the peace, and so they asked him to move on. Now, you've probably seen people doing something like this in your travels. And when you see someone out there giving it what for the Lord, do you tend to A, go up beside them and say, "Preach it, brother," or sort of go along quietly on the other side of the street? What do you think of the police stopping someone from preaching? Even if his message is right, what do you think of the wisdom of the way he proclaimed it? Paul wrote, "Let your conversation always be full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone." And I think a lot of street preachers have a lot of salt and maybe not too much grace. But then when I think of myself, perhaps I have grace, but not enough salt. Once when Jesus was sending his disciples out to proclaim the gospel, he said, "Be as wise as serpents and as innocent as doves." How can we be wise as serpents? How do we speak wisely, proclaim wisely, answer questions wisely with the gospel that we have to share? I've never really felt confident answering tricky spiritual questions that sometimes arise in conversations. I've done a lot to prepare myself for such conversations. I've read books, I've attended seminars that address the hard questions that people ask, but when it comes to having the conversation, when the rubber meets the road, I tend to stumble. Every conversation is different. There's no stock answer that suits all situations. Perhaps when we think about this, it's because in conversations, they involve relationships, sensibilities, emotions. And the conversation can take all sorts of twists and turns in which we're not only thinking about what we say, but how we say it, and the person or people we're saying it to. I'm sure that many of you, like me, will have had conversations and then later on you replay it in your head. If only I had thought to say, da-dum. If only they had said, then the conversation may have gone better. Christians have a problem. We're caught between a rock and a hard place. We're in this awkward place. It's not unique to any one of us. It's been shared by Christians throughout time. And the problem is, how do we talk about our faith? Especially when someone might ask us a hard question. We may not know how to answer it. Is it better not to have the conversation at all and so avoid any difficulties that may arise? You see, we have good news. We have the gospel. We know the forgiveness of sins. It means so much to us, and we want to share it with others, and yet doing so isn't easy. Sometimes it's hard. So if you were to think of a scale of 1 to 10, where one is keeping your faith to yourself and not saying anything, and 10 is being a street preacher, where would you put yourself on that line? You don't have to answer. I'm not asking for any confessions. But if at one end of this was grace and the other end of this was salt, where would you put yourself in terms of how you share your faith with others? How easily do you talk about your faith? When was the last time you had an engaging conversation with someone about matters of faith? I usually, when I'm sharing a message with you, keep the application to the end. But today, I'm going to give it to you right now at the beginning of the message. I want to encourage you and to challenge you to have one spiritual conversation in the week ahead. And in that conversation, I want you to ask one specific question. Now you're worried. I want to offer you an easy option. The easy option is to have this conversation with a Christian who shares your point of view. So that makes it really, really easy for you. The other option is to have that conversation with someone who may not share your point of view. And the question is this. I don't think you're going to find this hard. The question is this. What do you mean by that? That's the question that you're to ask them in the midst of the conversation. Some of us learned this question last year when listening to Gregory Kukul. We're watching stuff on YouTube, or you might find it in his book, Tactics. You can try this question in almost any conversation, a general conversation or a spiritual conversation. The intention is to gain clarity and to understand the meaning of something someone has just said to you. So, for instance, as you're speaking with people this week, someone may say to you, "The world is in a mess," and you would ask, or perhaps they may say to you, "This country is not doing enough about homelessness," and you would ask them. When you ask that question, all you're doing is asking them to clarify a little bit of what they mean. So they might say, "The country isn't doing enough about homelessness." That's a very broad sort of statement. If you ask them, "What do you mean by that?" they may say to you something specific. There may be a homeless person in their neighborhood that they're thinking about, or they may be thinking about how housing is supplied, all sorts of things. If you ask them, "What do you mean by that?" you can dig a little bit underneath that question. Perhaps someone might say something a little bit more challenging, like, "I don't think the Bible can be trusted," to which we would ask, isn't that a wonderful question? Because you see, what we tend to do when someone says something like, "The Bible can't be trusted," we tend to think we've got to jump to the defense of the Bible. But sometimes what we need to do is simply to ask them, "What do you mean by that?" They may have all sorts of reasons why they feel the Bible can't be trusted. There's no point us firing off with this reason it can be trusted if that's not their problem. We just listen to them. "What do you mean by that?" And then, if the success for this is simply asking that question, okay? The success this week is simply to ask the question, "What do you mean by that?" Or a variation of that question, "What do you mean by that?" That's success. They may or may not respond to that in a way that you feel is what you would like them to say. But to have actually just asked the question, count that as being success. And when they answer you, you can just say, "Thank you for helping me to understand your point of view. Thank you for helping me to understand your point of view. The Bible can't be trusted. What do you mean by that? I mean this and this and this and this. Well, thank you for helping me to understand your point of view." So you don't have to get into any debate. You don't have to argue about anything. You just need to ask them that question. What do you mean by that? Of course, if you want to take it a little further and explore that more with him, then you can. Now, you may be wondering, why am I asking you to do this? And maybe you will get your revenge on me at morning tea by asking me, John, what do you mean by that? You know, I think that most of us find including a spiritual element in our conversations can be a bit scary. Who knows where it's going to lead? Maybe I'm going to be out of my depth. I won't know what to say. I might embarrass myself. Worse, I might embarrass God. I might prove to be a spiritual failure. Now that's catastrophizing and looking at the worst case scenario. But I know some of you relate to that. I know some of you are worried that some of those things might happen should you start to have a conversation like that. You had a conversation like that 10, 15, 20 years ago. And you know what it's like to be put in that sort of scary situation. We know what it's like. What I want is for you to experience just simply asking a polite question. Don't go, "What do you mean by that?" Just be polite. What do you mean by that? It's a tiny step. It's just dipping your toe in the water of a conversation, deliberately introducing this question to see where it might take the conversation. It can be used in general conversation, in spiritual conversation. Asking the question means the other person gets to speak. It means that you're showing an interest in them and what they think. It allows you to listen to what they're saying, and you don't have to provide an answer. You don't have to defend the faith. You don't have to feel on edge. You ask the question and they do the talking. So let's turn our thoughts to the Bible for a moment. You know, tricky questions are only tricky until you know the answer. Our whole education system is built on this principle. That's why we have teachers. In this world of tricky questions, our 5-year-old granddaughter is learning to read and to write and to do some spelling. And she's facing really tricky questions like what do 2 and 2 equal? And if you were to ask her that at the moment, you might be able to stump her. How do you spell tree? How do you spell bird? You might be able to stump her. But you go back to her when she's 7 or 8 and it will be no problem. Because while this is a tricky question for her now, once she learns the answers, it's not tricky anymore. Now, if I was trying to answer questions from a university level engineering or chemistry exam, I need to be honest with you here, I probably wouldn't be able to understand the questions, let alone think of an answer for them. But some of you would look at those and for you it would be child's play because you've studied it and you've learned about it. Tricky questions are only tricky until you know the answer. Did you realize there's really only about 5 difficult questions that people ask about Christianity? If God is loving, why is there evil or sometimes suffering? How do you know that God exists? Or sometimes they would ask, where does God come from? Isn't it arrogant to say that Jesus is the only way? Or what about other religions? Hasn't science proved the Bible wrong? Or how do you know what's true? And if something is true, what's the meaning? How do you get any meaning out of things? Now, to be honest with you, these are not easy questions. They don't have easy answers. But they do have reasonable answers that we can give. Imagine if you were to learn the answers, some basic reasonable answers to 5 questions. You'd be able to say so much in terms of things that people might ask you. So a few weeks ago, we were looking at how Jesus was responding to difficult questions, and that got me thinking, how do we do that? Or even easy questions. How do we talk about our faith, whether the things that are asked are difficult or not? And remember, when Jesus was asked these questions, it was not in polite conversation by eager inquirers who honestly wanted an answer. These were questions by his opponents who were setting out to trap him and discredit him. Jesus was being set up, but he was actually up to that test. When Jesus was a child, we are told he was filled with wisdom and that he grew in wisdom. He was not only knowledgeable, he was also wise. Wisdom gave him insight and the ability to understand the questions and to answer them in ways that people were not expecting. When asked about paying tax, he looked at the coin, he saw the emperor's inscription and said, "Give to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's." When the Sadducees came with their really difficult question about marriage and what happens in heaven, they were trying to show that the resurrection, the idea of a resurrection, was nonsense. Jesus told them, "Hold on, go back to the Bible. Go back to the scriptures that you trust in, because you're in error about the scriptures and you're in error about the power of God." And he explained to them from their scriptures what they had missed seeing for themselves. When asked about the greatest commandment, to love God, he went beyond this and also spoke about loving your neighbor. Jesus gave wise answers that impressed the crowds. But take note, while he silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees, he didn't win them over. They didn't agree with him. They still went out and plotted how to kill him. And so at least one thing we can learn from this is we can give good and wise and reasonable answers to difficult questions, but we cannot control whether the other person is going to accept them or believe them or allow their lives to be changed by them. That is beyond our power. It's important to recognize that while Jesus gave reasonable answers, sometimes people just didn't agree with him or believe in him. And we can learn from that. When we are asked a difficult question, success is giving a reasonable answer, to give it with gentleness and with respect. We can't control what the other person will say or do or take away from that conversation. Even Jesus did not do that with these people. This should prepare us, in a sense, for the reality of interacting with people in a dynamic and fluid conversation. We're not always going to reach the conclusion that we want to reach. Despite a good answer, it may not go the way we would like it to go. Can I ask you for a moment as an aside, do your friends or family or your workmates know that it's okay to talk to you about faith? Are you a safe person for them to ask a question? Can you be trusted if they open up to you with a question that they're wrestling with? Will you treat that with respect? Or having found a weakness in their questioning, will you use that as leverage against them in some way? If they innocently ask you a little question, are you likely to dump on them everything you know about Christianity and overwhelm them with a tsunami of what you've been waiting to say for years for this first person to ask you? Further, have you given people the impression that your faith is private and you would rather not talk about it? Maybe they have some questions, but they think you're a private person. I don't want to intrude. I don't want to embarrass you. Or maybe in some cases you've been so quiet about your faith, they don't even realize you're a Christian, that they could ask you some questions. You know, if they don't know, that could be remedied by you simply saying something like, "You know, our church, when we gathered cans for the food bank the other week and we had over 600 cans, we were just so encouraged by that." Or you could say something about our children's holiday programs or something else that has happened in our church. Or if they mention something that's wrong, maybe you could say, "Well, I'll pray for you about that." Just to let them know that you actually are a person of faith. You may not wish to push your beliefs on someone, but if they ask you, then that's an invitation. And as Peter wrote, always be prepared to answer everyone who asks you to give a reason for the hope that you have. But do it with gentleness and with respect. And keeping in mind Jesus' discussion in the temple, it's helpful to think about the attitudes of the people we're talking to. He was able to do this because of his wisdom. This is where wisdom comes in, really. The writer of Proverbs reminds us, wisdom is supreme, not knowledge. Wisdom is supreme. You need knowledge, but you also need wisdom. And we should be applying ourselves to gaining wisdom. Wisdom will help us to understand and assess situations we're in, whether we can continue a conversation or whether it would be better for us just to ease off and back away at that time. You see, wisdom helps us to assess what to do when we're speaking with others. Wisdom will help us to know if we're talking to the head, to the heart, to the soul, or to the hand. At its best, when we're talking to the head, this represents someone genuinely puzzling stuff. And you see, our faith is a reasonable faith. And so we can give reason for our faith. We can interact with people on an intelligent level about an issue if they're trying to gain understanding. But you know, at its worst, the head might be simply toying with an idea for entertainment or debating for the fun of it, for the cut and thrust of ideas. I'm a bit of a sad character at times. And with Melanie's father, sometimes I would sit with him and I would say something. Not because I believed it, not because I was really interested in it, but because I knew it would wind him up. And in some ways, he's really easy to wind up. And then partway through the conversation, I would swap sides. And then I'd be saying something else. Well, that isn't really so good. It can be entertaining for us, but it's not really dealing with the issues. But we want to know, are people really thinking about these things? Or are we talking to their heart? Are we talking about things at an emotional level? Sometimes when someone asks, why does God allow suffering? It's not because they want you to give them reasons. It's because they're suffering, or a friend or family member is suffering. And what they need at that time is for you to show care and love. Not just a clinical answer about things, but pastoral assurance of God's love. Or talking to the soul. That refers to talking to this person who has a spiritual thirst and a spiritual openness. They're not wanting more information. They're not wanting you to be pastoral with their heart or their emotions. They're just thirsty, and they want you to speak something of life into their lives. In any person we meet, this is not simply one or the other, the heart or the head or the soul. We are complex beings. And so it can be a mix of all of these things, but wisdom can help us to identify what's really at the surface when we're talking with this person. And the last one I want to talk to you about is the hand. You know, basically, if you're talking to the hand, the person is saying, I'm not listening, I'm not interesting, I'm blocking you out, I'm ignoring what you say. Sometimes people in this frame of mind will be combative. They want you to hear them, but they're not interested in listening to you. If you push back, they may dig in their heels and escalate the issue. But to genuinely ask, what do you mean by that, may actually take some sting out of what they're saying and open them up for a conversation. It may not, but you can try. Well, some questions people ask are like Russian babushka dolls. Questions within questions. So these are pretty painted dolls. You open one up and there's another nice painted doll inside. You open that up and there's another one inside. And sometimes we need to just open these questions. It's a good conversation. Things are going well. It's helping us to get to the heart of things. But some other questions are like a Trojan horse. It's seemingly innocent, but there's danger hiding within. It's a question with some fishhooks. So, when the Pharisees and the Sadducees, the Herodians, came to ask Jesus questions, do you think they were asking the babushka doll type questions or the Trojan horse type questions? I think we know, don't we? It was the Trojan horse. They were trying to catch Jesus out with a question that had something hidden in behind it. If we can talk with people and ask them, what do you mean by that? We can delve deeper and deeper. Sometimes the first question that they ask, the issue that they're talking about, is only the tip of the iceberg. Maybe they're testing you to see if they can trust you with the next level of what they want to know, of what they want to talk about. This is where that question, what do you mean by that, can help us. And so I want to ask you to reflect. When you think about Jesus' wisdom, can inspire us, can encourage us. If you want to know a little bit more about hard questions, come tonight. We don't have all the answers. We're just sort of discussing. There's a flow of things that are being said there, but you may find that it helps you. How can we learn to have conversations seasoned with salt, seasoned with grace? This is Paul's recipe for a respectful conversation that offers spiritual nourishment, salt and grace. Can we overcome our fears, our reluctance, and enter into that conversation? Can we find the courage to initiate that conversation? And if we don't do too well the first time or the second time or the third time, can we come back and still have another conversation? And this week, will you step out of your comfort zone, step out in faith, and just ask in a non-threatening way, low-key, what do you mean by that? Well, we're going to come now to the Lord's table.